Hello, this is Cindy Gomez Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez Shemp.
And you're listening to KPPPLPFM. We're broadcasting online through 365 Live and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. That was Green Day with American Idiot. And today's topic is the next level of white allyship. Now, if you've been listening to our podcasts, we have been talking a lot about race in America. It's a very important topic. It's a huge national important topic.
It should be our number one topic of all people in this country today.
Yes. And because I believe so many people have ignored this topic, it has gotten out of hand. It has gotten out of control. The situation is literally about to blow up. It is a powder keg. It is the scene of deaths of black people, riots in the streets, police macing, shooting at people, news journalists. The rhetoric on television has turned toxic. We're really at a chaotic point in our country's history where we have neo-Nazis killing black people in a church in South Carolina. We have people being shot in movie theaters. We have mass murders, mass shootings in this country once a week. It definitely should be the most spoken about, discussed, and concerning topic in America at this time.
And we can't just sit back and just listen and be aware of it. We actually have to get active. We have to do something about it. That's the most crucial thing we need to focus on today.
Right. And in past podcasts, we've talked at length about different issues having to do with race, including the Black Lives Matter, Not All Lives Matter podcast, in which we talked at in depth about why people saying all lives matter is something you have to stop doing, folks. People have to stop doing that. Whatever your motivation for doing that, stop doing it now. It's not okay. And if you want to learn more about why, you can go back and listen to that podcast at kpppfm.com.
And if you go to that webpage, there's a link that says podcast, and you can look at all the podcasts that we've been recording. And there's also a live and on-air link where you can check to see if we're actually live on the air. And anything we put live on the air, we record and put in the podcast, and you can find it there.
And we also did another podcast in which we discussed the letter that I wrote to white people, the open letter I wrote to white people on the eve of their wake-up call. And that was met with a lot of response in the community. I got a lot of messages from folks telling me, thank you for sharing this. It was really tough to read. It was really tough to share with other white folks. And a lot of people had mixed emotions about confronting the kinds of things that I talked about in these podcasts and in these writings that I did about race and about what white folks need to do right now in America. With this anger, this defensiveness, an unwillingness to deal with the issue of race. So I did another podcast in response to this to help those who are on their path. They've decided they're going to confront racism in America as white people, and they really want to be, you know, progressive, open-minded, fighting for the civil rights issue of today, to be on the right side of history, but they're struggling. They don't know what to do. So yeah, we did this podcast.
And it's very helpful. A lot of times as a white person, I need tools. I need methods. And we went over that in that podcast, you know, in addition to the reading material. But it's really beneficial to listen to if you really want to know some of the methods to actually get your mouth open and deal with some of these things.
Right. And this podcast we're referring to is white people talking to other white people about race. So that was like, there's three podcasts. I mean, we talk about the intersectionality of race and a myriad of other issues, poverty, incarceration rates, you know, all of these historical references. And we've examined the history of where a lot of things come from, including policing issues in America, the immigration system in America.
Yes.
And again, all of that can be found on kpppfm.com.
Just click on the podcast link and you can listen to any of them.
Mm-hmm. So today we're talking about the next level of allyship. If you are not, this is like a 202 class in college. If you're not, if you haven't, and there's a prerequisite. First of all, you need to understand what white privilege is. You need to understand what racism is. If you believe that racism is whenever somebody burns a cross in someone's yard and or calls them the N-word or some other racial epithet, and you think that racism is only that, or when people of color call some white person a racist, you don't understand what racism is, not in the social justice
academic.
Right.
And I think it's really important for people to really understand what racism is, because individual racism, as you spoke of you using a racial slur, you know, those instances that are individual, it's nothing compared to the systemic and the societal pieces of racism. And there's plenty of material out there. You don't need to go to a 3-day workshop. You can just Google it and you can find all sorts of in-depth analysis that has uniformity in what racism is, in the definition of it. I'd encourage you to look that up.
Definitely. And so today, like I said, if you haven't got that background, today's show may not make any sense to you. It may, in fact, make you feel really uncomfortable and confused. But I would encourage you to sit through that discomfort. Let's be uncomfortable together. Maybe it could be fun.
Exactly. Uncomfortability leads to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it agitates you. It stirs you up. You need to be stirred up. Become unhinged.
Don't you think it can be fun? Because I think I unhinge you a lot, don't I, Duke?
Yes, yes.
I talk about things that you're not used to hearing about.
Yes, and even today's subject is something that I need to become unhinged. So I'll be reacting, I'll be listening, I'll be saying what I think and feel about the things you're about to tell us.
Well, I'm going to defer to a white ally and friend, actually, that I know, Sally Cohen. She wrote a article in the Washington Post called "The Ways in Which People Can Support Black Lives Matter." And this is very important. I believe the way that she approached it was the right way, which is why I wanted to mention her article. Shout out to Sally. And the stuff she writes is really spot on. I encourage you to follow her work. This particular article really spoke to me because what Sally did was go to black leadership and ask them what they want from white people as their allies. And that's the right thing to do.
That's exactly right. Take the lead from people of color. As a white person, I might be thinking something's going to be right spot on if I do it, but I need to have connections to people of color and take their direction. It's one of the most important things in being an ally, is to be able to take direction from people of color.
Yes, exactly. So we'll be talking about that. We will also be talking about why Black Lives Matter is the most important civil rights movement of our time. And, you know, especially with these presidential debates happening, everyone is really concerned about whether or not these presidential debates are going to include the issues that matter most to them. And for different folks, there's different strokes. Black Lives Matter is a huge problem. Racism is a huge problem in America. Are they going to discuss these things in the debates? Does the GOP care about these issues that really affect people of color? We also did a past podcast on Planned Parenthood. Does the GOP care about women and women's health and women's right to their own bodies? These are all questions that I would like to know about the leaders of our country, right? So these are important things. And I, in the context of history, Black Lives Matter may be the quintessential issue that, frankly, I have yet to hear a lot of people talk about. Bernie Sanders got his cage rattled by the Black Lives Matter movement at a conference. I can't remember the name of the conference right at this moment.
I'm sorry, I can't help you out with giving you the details.
Right, but it was something about tech, something. Anyway, the Black Lives Matter movement showed up there and he was going to be speaking and he didn't react too well. I think he had an embittered moment of, you know, privilege. Oh, privilege, yeah. That he didn't need to listen to these Black people about the loss of their lives. That, you know, he'd done enough for civil rights. And I'm not saying Bernie Sanders doesn't care. I believe Bernie Sanders is among the most not crazy sounding dudes running for president. Oh,
good place for him.
You know, but still, if you don't care about Black lives right now as a politician, you've been living under a rock. You literally need to do a lot of being blind, silent, deaf, dumb, and mute to ignore the protests, the riots, the killing of 9 Black people in a church, the burning of churches all around the South, the daily killing of unarmed Black people, the now numerous indictments of killer cops for the deaths of unarmed Black people. And the list goes on and on and on. So for these politicians to not be speaking about this directly, to not be talking about it constantly, is really tone deaf, in my opinion. I don't know. Am I crazy?
No, I think that's actually the true definition of colorblind, is that they just don't see Black people and they don't think about Black people or Black people's lives. So I think that they're colorblind. They have their eyes covered, basically, and their ears are shut.
I want to know what you guys think. So please send us your comments and questions. You can leave us a message at 701-566-0917 or PPP_media on Twitter. You can also email us at cindy@kpppfm.com
or duke@kpppfm.com.
That's right. And if you want to know what we talked about last show, we went over the impact of police in the schools.
That was a great, great show because there's so many details. Again, a previous podcast, we covered the history of police in this country. And then having known that, to go into this podcast to talk about how did police end up in our school systems and what is the benefit, what is the value? We covered a lot of those details in that podcast. I think it's very excellent to listen to.
A lot of these things are connected, folks. We were just talking about police shooting Black people in the Black Lives Matter movement, and we just talked about police in the schools and how that affects mostly people of color, a majority of people of color. That's who's being disproportionately affected. So now this is trickling into our schools and we've got handcuffed, grade schoolers, 8-year-old kids, 52 pounds, interrogations by police of children at school without their parents, the school to prison pipeline. We talked about all of these things and more. And where can people find that stuff?
Well, to find our podcasts and to see when we're broadcasting, go on the internet, go to kpppfm.com. Excuse me, let me do that one more time. kpppfm.com. And you click on live and on the air button, and or you can click on the podcast button. And you know, we really invite people from the community to send us programming they'd like to hear on KPPPLPFM. To do so, you can reach us by telephone. You can also find us on Facebook at the People's Press Project. You know, if you know someone who, you know, would like to do a show, you know, KPPPLPFM radio is looking for people in the FM area who want to produce and broadcast their own programs. KPPPLPFM gives a voice to those most underrepresented in the media. First and foremost, people of color. women, LGBTQA, the homeless, the poor, and also those who are traditionally disenfranchised from radio and other media platforms such as faith groups, nonprofits, blue-collar workers, elders, and kids.
And now, I want to get back to today's topic, the next level of white allyship. This is a next level show about information that white people who have been working on dealing with, confronting, interrupting racism, and fighting back against anti-blackness and bias in our society, wherever they may find it. You've been doing some hard work. I talked about it in previous podcasts. Today is the next level of information. And Sally Cohen did a great job of collecting information from leaders in the black leadership of this country, both in the Black Lives Matter movement and in a variety of other organizations that are linked to the work of surviving in a black life, surviving in black skin in this country. And one of the things that I would like to recommend is that people get some background in a lot of different topics. One that is intersected along with the racial ills of this country is toxic white masculinity. And there's an excellent article about this you can find on salon.com. We will have a link to this article on our website at kpppfm.com.
It'll be right on the podcast, right below the podcast. We'll source all our materials and put the links on there.
And let me know if we should do a whole separate show on this one topic, because I totally could. I mean, it's on this toxic white masculinity, just so you folks know what it is. I won't go into too great of detail, but you can see this on full display in the GOP candidates that we have, like Trump, the boisterous sort of run over you ramshod type of behavior and rhetoric, the same type of toxic white masculinity can be found on Fox News and in the angry white male that has dominated the media. The stories of these vigilantes, these angry white men that go off with their guns and intimidate people and threaten people. It is something terrifying. Here is why I think it's something that you need to consider in connection with what we're talking about today. And that is why white people need to step up their work to stop racism, why it's up to white folks to do it also, to do it with us. Because this is something that affects all of us.
Yes.
And toxic white masculinity is intersected with this. I'm going to read you an excerpt from this article, as I find it fascinating. Toxic white masculinity defaults to violence as a means of maintaining social and political control. It clings to guns as a symbol of real male identity. That sounds familiar.
Oh, yeah.
It fears women as equals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that one right there. You know, when we talk about intersectionality, I think it's really important to mention that we will focus on race, and racism is a primary issue that needs to be focused on. But we can take other issues as long as they're in the context of race. So we will talk about masculinity, misogyny, sexism, supremacy. They are all in the context of racism.
Right. And they intersect in very bad ways for, you know, women, people of color, and all of those that have additional overlapping issues, like being a person of color and a woman like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also means that toxic white masculinity lashes out at non-whites who are somehow stealing white men's job and power. It sounds like it's Donald Trump. They're describing Donald Trump.
It does.
To me, toxic white masculinity sees liberals, progressives, social justice, and feminism as enemies. That's why they're like, the feminazi.
That's right.
Out of fear that white masculinity will somehow be made obsolete or extinct. The dream worlds and paranoid fantasies of angry white men are distractions that look to some type of other, right? Who's the other?
The enemy.
Right, the other. The Mexicans.
The Mexicans.
It's the black people.
Black people, people of color.
And those are the preeminent threats in society that are, they're making us unsafe. It's the Muslims.
Yeah.
Of course, the reality is very different. And what's happening in America today is that right-wing domestic terrorists and mass shooters are the number one threat to Americans' safety and security since 9/11, yes. Folks. Not Muslims. White males. White men are approximately 31% of the U.S. population, and yet somehow white men are nearly 63% of those people who commit mass shootings. Let me say that again. 63% of mass shooters, mass murderers, that is.
Wow. And only 31% of the population, and yet responsible for well over half of all the mass shootings in this country. That's horrendous.
If this were happening within any other racial group, we would be considering that pathological.
Yes.
And an emergency public health crisis.
Yes.
But we don't. Not in America.
No.
Also recommend, this is very important reading for everyone. I loved this book. I recommend that you read it. I think everyone in this country should have to read this book. It's by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me. Lots of people have been talking about it. There's a link on our website at kpppfm.com where you can find the excerpt that I'm going to refer to in this book.
And the book is easy to find. Amazon carries it, and we actually got a Kindle version of it for less than $10, and we read through the whole thing in one day.
Right, one sitting. It was just one sitting, and it was an amazing sitting. But this is written to Ta-Nehisi Coates' son, who was 15 years of age at the time of the writing. And he says some things that are so, they pierce right to the heart, right to your heart when you read them. And it really indicts our country for what we have been ignoring for hundreds of years. Because let us not forget, it hasn't been that long that black people have really been free. Not just free of shackles, but free of being indentured servants, sharecroppers, and being on the chain gang, and then being under Jim Crow segregation. It hasn't been that long.
No, it hasn't.
So he talks about what has been happening in the destruction of black lives, and how this must be affecting his son, who still believes in good things, and he's seeing all of these dead kids and seeing no indictments, and how this is making him feel probably like his life is pretty meaningless in this country where black lives can be churned under the wheels of the quote unquote justice system, and black children and women and men who are unarmed don't even matter as much as Cecil the Lion.
Oh, yeah.
It's very troubling. Here's one of the quotes about this time in our history and these things. He says, there is nothing uniquely evil in these destroyers or even in this moment. The destroyers are merely men enforcing the whims of our country, correctly interpreting its heritage and legacy. This legacy aspires to the shackles of black bodies. It is hard to face this, but all our phrasing, race relations, racial chasm, racial justice, racial profiling, white privilege, even white supremacy, serves to obscure that racism is a visceral experience, that it dislodges brains, blocks airways, rips muscles, extracts organs, cracks bones, and breaks teeth. You must never look away from this. You must always remember that the sociology, the history, the economics, the graphs, the charts, the regressions all land with great violence upon the body. And should one live in such a body, what should be our aim beyond meager survival of constant generational ongoing battery and assault? I have asked this question all my life. I have sought the answer through my readings and writings, through my music, the music of my youth, through arguments with your grandfather, with your mother. I have searched for answers in national myth, in classrooms, out on the streets, and on other continents. The question is unanswerable, which is not to say futile. The greatest reward of this constant interrogation, of confrontation with the brutality of my country, is that it has freed me from the ghosts and myths. It really is such a beautiful, beautiful book.
I really enjoy the way it's written. It's it says he's writing a letter to his 15-year-old son. And what it does, it puts you in the driver's seat as the reader. You're the audience. You're his 15-year-old son. And you learn so much about him and his life as he tells his son what he has to face and what he's going to face and to wake up. I think it was just an excellent way to really explain these issues and make it very, very, very personal.
True. And, honestly, Ta-Nehisi said that this was, a writing device, because he talks like this to his son, and he has been doing so since he was a very young kid. So, but what he does, what I think is really connected to today's topic, is this, that he is telling us that throughout our history, we have not cared. As white people in America, white people have not cared about black lives. They haven't even cared that black lives should have freedom, not even as, long ago as 100 years. It hasn't even been that long, within the last 50 years. And even then, we have failed, because we still have redlining and segregation, and voting rights are being retracted as we speak. Major victories have been getting won in the courts recently with regard to SB 1070 type and the removal of ethnic studies from Arizona, and voting rights and voter ID law issues across the country. We've also seen gay people achieve equality in their ability to marry. Mm-hmm. That has not stopped individual states, I'm ashamed to say, even North Dakota, from coming up with some pretty cockamamie ways of still turning gay people into second-class citizens, to shame them,
mm-hmm.
and to punish them.
And deny them their rights.
Right, exactly, to deny them their rights.
And that's been the whole way that our country has dealt with people of color, is that we've continually denied people of color rights in the Constitution, beyond the Constitution.
It's been white supremacy to keep someone below white people. And this is what Ta-Nehisi says. This is one, the paragraph that connects to why white people need to do something about this yourselves. You need to do this. He says, "You and I, my son, are that below." That was true in 1776. It's true today. There is no them without you. And without that right to break you, they must necessarily fall from the mountain, lose their divinity, and tumble out of the dream. And they then would have to determine how to build their suburbs on something other than human bones, how to angle their jails towards something other than a human stockyard, how to erect a democracy independent of cannibalism. I would like to tell you that such a day approaches when the people who believe themselves to be white renounce this demon religion and begin to think of themselves as human. But I can see no real promise of such a day. We are captured, brother, surrounded by the majoritarian bandits of America. And this has happened here in our only home. And the terrible truth is that we cannot will ourselves to an escape on our own.
Wow. That's a very powerful statement.
And we're going to talk about that in the context of what white people can do. If you feel appalled about what's happening in America as a white person, you can do something. There's a lot of kind of prerequisite 101 information you can find in our previous podcasts on our website. And this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp. If you just caught up to our program, we are on kpppplpfm.com.
And you know, we're going to be found on the dial here in Fargo-Moorhead at 88.1. And our slogan, our motto, what we live by, is adding local color to your airwaves.
Yes, and if you have strong feelings about what we're talking about on this show or any others, you can send us your comments, questions, and show topic ideas to Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com.
Excellent.
Or you can leave us a message at 701-566-0917 or tweet us at @media_ppp. Now we're going to take a short musical break and you'll be listening to John Legend. Glory.
When the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory. Oh,
hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory. Oh, now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish, and then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh glory, oh glory, we'll cry glory,
every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon is to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours.
Cindy Gomez Shemp, and you're listening to KPPPLPFM, broadcasting online through 365 Live and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves.
And this is Duke Gomez Shemp. You can send our comments, you can send your comments and questions on show topic ideas to Cindy at kpppfm.com or send them to me at Duke at kpppfm.com. You can also leave us a message at 701-566-0917, or you can tweet us at media_PPP.
And we are talking today about the next level of white allyship. And we're going to be talking about what Sally said. Sally Cohen, who is a activist and a writer, and she's a frequent CNN commentator. Excuse me. She wrote in a Washington Post article that is titled, "This is what white people can do to support Black Lives Matter." And I think Sally did it right because she went to black leadership and asked them, what can we do as white people? And here are some of the things that they said. The first thing was they don't like the term ally. I found that one interesting because I thought, I have such a hard time even talking about white privilege with white folks, or
and it's really hard for to understand what an ally is. It's hard for me to spell it. In fact, it can be spelled about four different ways. But to understand what it means to be an ally, it's been something I've been trying to learn, trying to work with, and trying to understand. So when that comes out as a "don't use the word ally," my ears are open because I want to understand what that means.
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of information. It's coming at us kind of fast and furious, but we have a national crisis. We have a civil rights issue that is humongous. It is a huge problem. To borrow a phrase from Trump, it's huge.
It's definitely huge. Just huge.
And this is what Dante Barry, who's the executive director of the Million Hoodie Movement for Justice, said that the term is too passive. He thinks it's too passive. It doesn't provide a sense of risk equal to the level of risk black folks experience every single day. I can relate to that.
Yeah, I can too, because the term ally is like, okay, I need to be really allied with people. I need to be really focusing in on where I can be of assistance.
Yeah, it doesn't mean sit on the curb. Yeah. It doesn't mean sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, I just saw that. I saw it on the news and I care about it, but that's all I'm going to do.
See, but I think white people that think they're allies if they agree with what you're talking about inside their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they started to, you know, watch or CNN or listen to black writers' audiobooks or, you know, something like that, then they think that, okay, that's my allyship. No, that's part of your educating yourself on all of the information around you that you need to be a good ally, but that isn't in itself white allyship. And I think people have a lack of understanding of what that really means. And I think a lot of what white allyship means to white people is being developed by white people.
That's true. I believe you on that one.
And I think that's kind of problematic. Can you see why that would be problematic, Duke?
Yes, because everything about being an ally is taking lead from people of color. So if I'm just making up myself what I think an ally is, and I'm not checking in with the people I'm supposed to be allied with, I'm going the wrong direction.
Right. But see, the thing is that some of the stuff that black people are doing, that people of color are doing, is pretty risky. Do you remember the video we saw? There was a recent news story about riots where, police are attacking, you know, children, where police are shooting rubber bullets into the crowds,
yes,
at the media. When we see these things, you know, this is very frightening.
Oh, it's horrifying.
But, you know, this is targeting mostly people of color crowds. You know, there's white folks out there too, though.
Oh, yeah.
They're standing in the trenches, as it were, on the front lines with people of color. There's not huge amounts of them, but there are more and more of them every day.
That's good. Very good.
And what this tells us is that white folks, to be effective, to be really helpful, they need to be in there with us, not as allies, but as partners. right?
Definitely.
Dante Barry, I'll quote another little piece here. He said, "I want comrades who will show up when I'm most vulnerable and be in active solidarity with my struggle as a person in a black body and take some risks because I'm putting my life on the line every single day." And that can't be overstated enough. Black people are dying every day.
And people of color are taking all the risks. And as white people, the best thing that we could do to be an ally is actually take some risks instead of just showing up or being way in the background and not being any of the thick of it. We need to take those risks. And that's one of the thresholds I think white people really need to challenge in themselves is to start taking real risks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the second one comes from Mervin Mercano, who's the spokesman for Ferguson Action. And he basically said that allies are best as accomplices. Sounds similar to what Dante Barry said. Mm-hmm. But again, the emphasis here is for racist institutions to be dismantled. It's not about a personal preference. It's not about a Dylan Roof that is a neo-Nazi or sympathizer or no. It's culture, it's institutions that are historical. These don't get erased overnight. They're there in our educational system, in our government policies, in our laws. It wasn't that long ago that it was okay for white people to segregate black people to the point where people were being beaten down at lunch counters for trying to sit next to a white person. People were throwing acid in pools because they didn't want black people to swim with white people. They didn't want black kids to go to school with white children.
Mm-hmm. Or live in neighborhoods with white people.
Right. And we are just as segregated in America today. Do you know the number of people that, white people that have a person of color that is actively in their life in America?
I do. It's 75% of white people don't have a friend who is a person of color.
Right.
So it's 20.
And yet all white people will tell you that they have a black friend. The truth is when, you know, push comes to shove, they have an acquaintance. They know someone, maybe the person that bags their groceries or something, and they think that qualifies them as their friend.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of shows about these kinds of, you know, discussions of race and the history of policing and a bunch of other great podcasts that people can find online. Where?
At kpppfm.com. We have a tab on there for a podcast where we put all of our tape shows, and we also have a live and on-air link. You can click that, see if we're on the internet, and also see all the podcasts below there also.
Mm-hmm. And today's show is about the next level of white allyship. So this is what the next activist said, Jonetta LZ, team member of Mapping Police Violence, said that white people should use their whiteness as a shield. I've said something similar to...
Yes, to me.
Yes.
To me, your husband.
Yes, yes, yes. So this means that white folks are partners with people of color. And I liked this quote because they've stood in front and next to us when we ask them to. That is really powerful to me because sometimes we want white people to stand next to us. Sometimes we want white people to stand in front of us. Why? Jonetta pointed out that a living demonstration of white privilege at these protests, at these peaceful protests, for the most part across the country in response to black lives being taken by police, was to see that the line of white people were handled by police with kid gloves while they would rush through to brutalize black and brown bodies. That's why white folks can use their power of whiteness to protect and defend black lives. These are things that black people are asking, and we have to listen what black people ask us to do if we really want to show that we have concern for Black lives in this country. Currently, statistically, we have failed miserably at showing that we care about Black lives in this country.
Yes.
We don't show that Black lives matter in this country.
No, we don't. We have a person of color killed every 28 hours in this country by police.
Right. A Black life taken
black,
by
Black
by,
life taken
by police.
Every 28 hours by police.
Right. And we did a podcast about Black Lives Matter. If you want to listen to that, you can find it on our website. This is KPPPLPFM broadcasting online via 365 Live, and you can soon find our programs on the airwaves at 88.1 FM, adding local color to your airwaves.
If you want to give us a call and leave a message to give us some suggestions or responses or some advice, you can dial 701-566-0917. We may actually use your comments online. And you can also tweet us at media_PPP, or you can email Cindy at cindy@kppfm.com, or you can email me, duke@kppfm.com.
So this is what white people can do to support Black Lives Matter. An article in the Washington Post by Sally Cohen went into the details of what white people can do, written by a white person, and devoted to asking Black people what they want, which is what the coolest part of this was. Here's one more from Umi Salah, the mission director of the Dream Defenders. And I believe she said, "Safe spaces are illusions." This is troubling. "Racism is an illness that afflicts each and every one of us. It steals our humanity, our capacity for empathy, the righteous indignation that is our birthright. I don't believe in allies. I believe in the decolonizing power of solidarity. White people ought to challenge themselves to engage in more spaces of risk and difference." Difference.
Wow.
Right? So shielding, helping,
yeah.
How can you make a difference? Is what you're doing making a difference? White folks need to ask themselves that, because I see a lot of white folks, well-meaning,
mm-hmm.
who go out and do things in solidarity with people of color whom they didn't really ask to be in leadership,
yeah.
or, you know, find out what they wanted, like Sally did in this article. And what they're doing, while it may on the surface look like it's something that is held in solidarity with those folks, like a parade of some sort, or I don't know, some of the other well-meaning things that have happened to support Black groups, but that are kind of just window dressing, that really don't make a difference. And this is what Salah is saying. Does what you're doing make a difference?
And the way to know that is you have to check in. You have to check in with people of color as you're involved in whatever you're being asked to be involved in. You better be willing to take some really strong, truthful analysis of what you're doing. And that's what you need to pay attention to, because you might have thought that what you did was really helping out, and it might have been something that moved everybody backwards. So you have to be really, really tough and open to really understand what you really need to do.
Yeah, it's called racial stamina building. And it's hard. It's not necessarily something that white folks are used to. It can be difficult to hear that you, who were doing something you thought was really good for the cause, are actually making people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There was a group of white people exclusively on Facebook recently that started a group not on behalf of Black Lives Matter. They started a group calling themselves the Black Lives Matter movement from the Bay Area, when there is already a Black Lives Matter movement from the Bay Area, okay. led by Black people.
Wow.
And this entirely white, leadership did this without asking the Black people that created the group and speaking for them. This can be usurping the power of Black people, silencing and erasing Black people.
Mm-hmm.
To their detriment, not in their favor, although the white people that were doing it may have felt like they were doing something good. But you can't do something good by doing it Rachel Dolezal style and putting on blackface and pretending to be them. You have to actually listen to the people. So if you can't listen to the people that that are being affected, then being a white ally is something you can't do. You're not doing it right. You're failing at it.
Yeah, you better just get out of the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say. And Martin Luther King, all that long time ago, a lot of people like to bring up Martin Luther. Oh, you guys are all, Martin Luther King would say this. This is what Martin Luther King said, okay? This is what he said in the letter from the Birmingham jail, April 16, 1963. We'll have a link on our website to this letter. He said, first, he's talking about white progressive folks. A lot of you white progressive out there. This is how he is referring to you back then. This is how the Black Lives Matter movement leaders, this is how people that care about black lives today are saying about white progressives today.
White people, open your ears.
Right. Listen, this is what Martin Luther King said. First, I must confess that over the last few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I can't agree with you in the methods of direct action, who paternalistically feel he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by the myth of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait until a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. I mean, that's a message for today's white progressive.
I think that it's been ruling white progressives since that time, even before that time, because I've heard it many times in our encounters on Facebook, our encounters in the community, as we give talks, as we interact with people, specifically white people who say that they are wanting to work on racism or work with this issue. And they'll end up not liking the way someone talked, or not like some tone, and they'll say, well, I'm not going to support this issue because the way you talked about it. And they back out totally, which means they were never committed in the first place.
Yeah, and it's dividing progressives. This is dividing progressives. I see it on social media because there are some white progressives, like Sally Cohen, for example, who wrote this Washington Post article, This is What White People Can Do to Support the Black Lives Matter, excuse me. And today's topic, if you just tuned in, is the next level of white allyship. You're listening to KPPPLPFM. We're broadcasting right now online through 365 Live, and soon you'll be able to listen to us on the air at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves.
If you want to leave us a message and give us some input, you can call 701-566-0917. Or you can tweet us at @media_PPP, or you can email Cindy at cindy@kpppfm.com, or email me, duke@kpppfm.com.
We really appreciate all your feedback, all your comments. We just started recently to go on air through 365 Live, and we have so appreciated all of our listeners, all of the feedback. It has been really heartwarming. Thank you to all of those people out there listening. Please share our shows with others. Spread the knowledge. Spread the reach of what KPPPLPFM can do in our community. We really love hearing from you folks. And to get back to today's topic, here is another comment from Darnell Moore, who is the senior editor at Mike and co-managing editor at The Feminist Wire. The real liberatory and radical work begins at home, literally. Is that true?
Definitely, it's true for me. I live with people of color, you know, and I've lived with white people too, but the real work begins.
You lived with white people at some point in your life?
Yeah, I grew up with white people.
Why is that?
Because my mother is white, my father is white.
Does that make you
and
white?
I am white. I am definitely white.
Just checking.
Oh, yeah.
But so my point is this something you've lived? Do you understand what this starting at home means?
It means that you're at your base, at your most vulnerable spot, at your safest spot. You're working on this.
Yes. And you know what? That's where it has to start. Even if you don't live with people of color, the work of liberating, of dismantling racism begins in the home with your kids, with your family, with your choices that you make in your house. You have to start talking to your friends. You have to get uncomfortable. We've been talking about all the things you can do as a white person that really make a difference.
And you have to teach your children too. This makes me think of growing up.
And your neighbors?
And this makes me think of when I was growing up that we lived in Minot, North Dakota, and there was an Air Force base. And we had a lot of black families that moved to Minot, North Dakota. In fact, the population when I was young was 10% of the population was African American. And I remember there's this kid across the street that I met, and I went to his house. And I remember his mother being really cautious about him hanging out with me, and I took him to my house, and my parents were very, really cautious, but they never talked about it. They should have talked to me that this is like 1967, and they should have talked about how our neighbors here are oppressed by white society. They're living in a totally different society, even though they live across the street from us. And if they would have talked to me in ways that I could understand more of what was going on with the social dynamics of race and racism and oppression, I would have learned so much more, and I would have been a much better ally and friend to that young person when I was young.
Exactly. And so that work needs to start in your house. You need to work on that. If you're not working against the structural racism that is oppressing and killing people of color in this country, my friends, you are willfully ignorant. You're being lazy. You're not educating yourselves. You have no excuse in this country anymore. You cannot hide from the massive protests, the cries of people of color demanding the dignity of their lives. In America, you cannot. Even if you try to pretend, you'd have to be living under a rock in order to ignore what is happening. I wonder whether or not our presidential candidates are going to talk about this stuff.
I wonder too.
And, you know, here's another really important point. This one by Celeste Faison, co-founder of the Black Out Collective and coordinator of Black Lives Matter Bay Area. We were just talking about this group. You can be a progressive and be anti-black. I'm going to translate for you what Celeste said. You can be racist and be a progressive.
Yes.
You can think of yourself as liberal and be racist and be anti-black and have anti-black bias and not know it. We all have that. We have been spoon-fed for hundreds of years on a steady diet of manifest destiny and Jim Crow segregation. We have been fed on a mass media diet of war on drugs, which was really the face of war on black people, the war on women on welfare, which was really a war on people of color, poor people of color. And this hasn't stopped. It hasn't changed. We still are seeing people killed every single day, now by police, churned out by the prison, school-to-prison pipeline and the mass incarceration system in this country. You can be progressive in this country and be anti-black. Believe it. Understand it. It has to be something you have to believe. You have to take off the blinders and the earplugs and the, no, that can't be me. I'm a good progressive.
No, we've got to take the progressive army and retrain the progressive army, because I think about this a lot, because I see it every day. I've seen it to myself. I've been held accountable to that, and other progressives need to be open enough to be held accountable to their own anti-blackness.
See, but progressives and liberals, and even a lot of libertarians, they think they're the anti-black and progressive are synonymous. That if you're progressive, then you're fighting against racism. You're one of the good people. These are not synonymous, guys.
No, they're not. They're not.
Just because you have progressive politics, just because you like Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. just because you like Rand Paul, just because, no, it doesn't mean that you are not racist. It doesn't mean that you are not ignorant about the real requests, the needs of Black Lives Matter movement people, the people that are working on trying to let people in this country have the dignity of humanity. They're saying Black Lives Matter. So you have to do racial analysis. That means white folks need to do racial analysis. Being progressive does not give you a pass because, oh, now you know everything by osmosis. No, you guys have to go do that work. You have to learn. You have to look to Black and brown leadership and say, what do you folks need?
Yeah, definitely.
The next person is someone we know really well, Malkia Cyril.
Oh, Malkia.
She's the director of the Center for Media Justice and also the co-founder of the Media Action Grassroots Network, which KPPPLPFM is a member of.
Oh, yeah.
And what Malkia said is that we have to expand what being progressive means in this country. What do you think being progressive means in this country?
What do I think progressive means being in this country? Well, you know, I think that we've defined it in the past, but it needs a new definition, and that's what this article is talking about, that we need to redefine what progressive is. And I tell you, I've grown in my life that once I think I know something, I get all like overzealous about it, and I realize I might know it, but I don't know anything, and I need to be open to knowing more.
Here's the thing that bothers a lot of people of color. This is what Malkia is talking about. No one wants to talk about race. No one wants to talk about racism. Racism. And I talked about this at the beginning of the podcast and the intersections of toxic white masculinity. These things are killing people in America. Not just Black people, primarily Black people. Primarily people of color. Primarily people that have the weakest people, the mentally ill, the transgendered, the children. Those who can least defend themselves are being crushed under this system of inequality and racism and toxic white masculinity. But what is lacking is the will of leadership amongst the white people, who are the majority of the leadership, let's face it, in this country and have been forever. To say there's got to be something for us to do about this problem, that we have to stop this now. All they talk about is economic solutions. They only talk about improving education. They talk about Band-Aid solutions. They tell us it's not really about race. It's about class, you mm-hmm. see. It's not really about racism. No, 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 no. Let's not focus on the racism. Let's not focus on the history of racism in this country. Let's ignore that. Let's whitewash it. Let's call it something else. Let's say that it is, you know, we have a disappearing middle class. That's it. That's oh, yeah. it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's it. Oh, we have a war on values.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. What we are ignoring is what we need to focus on. This is coming from the mouths of the Black people. This is what Malkia said. We're not going to fix a problem that is taking a life and every 28 hours. I believe Sean King tweeted that by his best estimates. He's a journalist. You can find him, Sean King, at Twitter, Sean King. He said that since 2000, I believe, I'm probably misquoting, and I just saw it in a blur today on Twitter, but he believes that over 7,000 people have been killed by police.
Wow.
And we should be concerned with the number of people that are being killed by police.
Yeah.
The last time I looked at the counter from that Guardian article that we mentioned, was about close to 700. It was really quickly approaching 700 people.
For just this year.
Just for this year.
Wow. That's terrible.
2015.
Wow.
Woo, America.
Oh, yeah, America.
It's just, it's terrifying.
No, it is. It's,
what's happening in this country, and the fact that there isn't anyone talking about it, that it takes so long for people to talk about it. And when they do talk about it, it's done on this very, oh, woe is me. What the tragedy? How did this happen? But no connection to racism. Yeah,
and to people, to humans.
It's almost enough to make you want to bang your head against a wall. When we have Dylann Roof killing people and the news media, you know, bobbing around for answers in the stratosphere, anything but the real reason, the fact that he's, you know, a KKK loving, neo-Nazi sympathizing, black people hater.
Yeah.
He told them when he killed people in there, you're raping our women and we want our country back. It sounded like Trump.
Yeah,
you know, it was. And then, wow, how did this happen? Where did this come from?
Where did it come from? He's just following the rules that were set forth by the white people who took over this country from people of color. It's been the playbook since day one. And then we're surprised when someone adheres to spouting about those beliefs and when those beliefs are the basis for the beliefs and the behavior of racism and genocide in this country.
Right. If you're in that camp where you think that, you're in the willful ignorance camp. You're in the I refuse to see the writing on the wall camp.
Yeah.
You're the denier of the truth camp.
Mm-hmm. The stealth bomber eyewear that we wear.
Yeah. The la 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 la, I am not listening to you. The I don't like facts camp. And you can live there, but this podcast is probably not for you.
Yeah.
This is for those who want to reach the next level of white allyship. This is for the group of people out there who care, who want to see their country change, who are sick and tired of seeing the direction that this country is taking and the way that they're ignoring the deaths of black people and brown people.
And you need to work, and it's going to be work, and you need to be committed to the work to make a change.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was mentioned in this article that was written by Sally Cohen, by Robbie Clark. This is the comment by Robbie Clark of Black Lives Matter Bay Area. She's another organizer. She said, stop saying all lives matter. We talked about this in another podcast.
Yeah, we did.
And it was called Black Lives Matter, Not All Lives Matter. You can go back and listen to that at kpppfm.com.
And click on the podcast link.
Yeah, and what basically we said in that podcast is what Robbie is saying here. It doesn't matter why you think it's okay to say all lives matter. Stop doing it for the love of everything. Stop it.
Yes.
Don't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Go research why it's so horribly, horribly wrong and stop doing it. It's not okay. You're going to feel really, really terrible. When people look back at history, all those people that were screaming, all lives matter. You guys don't care. You're not... Black lives matter aren't more important than white lives. That's not what black people are saying, folks. If you don't understand that, you're being willfully ignorant. There's plenty of information you can read written by black folks about what it does mean. And if you don't understand it, it's because you haven't listened to any of them. And if you don't want to listen to black people, then this is not something you're going to understand. White allyship is something foreign to you. Black lives mattering is something foreign to you. This show is probably making you angry.
Yeah.
But I invite you to stay and listen because you should get uncomfortable. The majority of people in this country is people of color now. The majority of children being born in this country is now Latino, right? The new most given name in this country is Maria.
Yeah.
And Juan.
And Juan.
Those are the new most popular names. It's not Tyler.
Yeah.
Or Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So go figure it out. It's not our black person's duty to educate you why what you're saying is ignorant. Don't derail the conversation to focus it on you, to have someone educate you. Go find out why it's wrong. Stop saying it in the meantime.
Yeah, I agree.
Alicia Garza from the National Domestic Workers Alliance and also a co-creator of the Black Lives Matter hashtag and activist in the movement said that it has to go beyond Black Lives Matter. First, you have to be able to stop saying all lives matter. You have to make yourself say Black Lives Matter. You have to educate yourself and others. You have to listen to this whole podcast and figure out the stuff we said at the beginning of the program and why that is something you need to learn how to do first. And then you have to go beyond.
Yeah.
It's not enough.
That's what I said. It's a growing edge. You got to keep on going. You got to feel that uncomfortability. And then you actually have to go deeper. And you have to be open to going deeper.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? You have to care about the deportation of Mexicans and other Latinos in yes. this country and all of the detentions of our people, the mass incarceration of black people. You have to start fighting for domestic workers. You have to start fighting for all of the people that are abusing those U visas, that are raping people that are coming to this country on visas, the kind of visas that are used by hypocrites like Donald Trump. You have to care about all of the structural racism in this country and figure out how to dismantle it. It has to go beyond Black Lives Matter. If you really care about human beings, you have to care about all of those that are the least of these. And ain't it ironic that a lot of the people that are in this conservative, Republican, GOP, All Lives Matter, not Black Lives Matter camp are conservative Christians? Hmm. That's disturbing to me.
Yeah, yeah. It shows hypocrisy.
But, you know, this next comment is also very salient, very meaningful to this conversation, which is stop treating black people as if they're stupid. This is what Amani Gandhi said. She's a senior analyst for RH Reality Check and co-host of This Week in Blackness Prime. People of color know what they're doing. Don't have this paternalistic attitude that, oh, they're doing it wrong. This is what we were talking about earlier with Martin Luther King and his quotes and the kinds of things that he was saying about white progressives. It hasn't changed that much. There isn't that much difference. And finally, white folks, this is very important that you take on as your cause. Black Lives Matter has to matter to you, and you have to organize yourselves. This was a quote from Charlene Carruthers, who's the national director of Black Youth Project 100. It's your responsibility to care. Black Lives Matter is organizing themselves. Recently, there was a kid, Zachary Hammond, I believe his name was, a white teen that was shot in the back by police over a bag of marijuana, something that is now legal in many states, which many white people are making lots of money off of in places like Colorado, where it's even legal for recreational use. And a police officer shot and killed a teenager in the back over marijuana. Ironically, many of the people on Twitter who were commenting that were white, the very small handful of them that I saw, were all complaining about the fact that, does all lives matter now?
Oh, like it erases something.
Right, like something was being taken away from the All Lives Matter care and movement, the white people dying simply because black lives demanded recognition. And the other ironic part was that the majority of people that were talking about Zachary Hammond and his death were black people demanding justice for him. And the fact that white people feel this entitlement to, you know, just chop, chop, black people, get to our next task, like mm-hmm. they're somehow still your slaves, go and organize around our issues. Y'all need to organize your own issues.
Yes, exactly.
Y'all have to go and organize other white people and talk to your own white folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's your job to do. Commit yourselves to doing that with other white people and talking to other white people. That is your lot in life.
Definitely. We have to do it under the frame of racism. We have to understand racism. We have to understand the frame and do our organizing under that frame.
Right. We don't need white saviors. We're going to be all right. We can take care of ourselves. So we need you to take care of your end of this spectrum. This is Cindy Gomez Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez Shemp.
You've been listening to KPPPLPFM. Today's show's been about the next level of white allyship. And I'm going to leave you with that thought as performed live at the 2015 BET Awards by Kendrick Lamar. We're going to be all right.
When I wake up, I recognize you're looking at me for the pay cut. But homicide be looking at you from the face down. We'll make 11 even more with the face down. Skip it, now let me tell you about my life. Painkillers when you put me in the twilight. We're pretty, it's the highlight. Now tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord, no, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me. Everything I stole, so my karma coming heavy. Living every year, so my record. Tell them all my case, just silent for the record. Tell the world I know. Care about wearing that your upper body.
When the kitchen working at the out your parents' house.
All right.
14 years old, so I'm stone roll, making plays on board.
All right.
Big K's and my big dogs never ever went straight home, boy.
All right.